who are ashamed of gay pride. Gay pride has essentially become nothing more than a giant advertising campaign from multinational corporations.
God makes different kinds of people, and we need to learn to live together. And that, coming from an Islamic point of view, is a huge, big step.
Bit of controversy doesn't hurt from time to time, you know?
Certainly
gets all those conservatives like me off our tails.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The peak of Pride season also includes some valleys. While shame is the name at alternative events, gay Muslims bring the mountain to Muhammad, and Queensland's premier is quizzed on queer rights. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Innes.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 30th, 2001. The gay and lesbian pride season peaked this week with the anniversary of the 1969 uprising at the Stonewall Inn in New York City. A then-routine police raid on the gay, lesbian, and transgender bar set off 3 days of rioting. That rebellion is considered to mark the beginning of the contemporary movement for gay and lesbian civil rights. The observance of the anniversary in major U.S. cities has spread both to smaller towns there and around the world. It's also spread beyond the month of June, with events scheduled through most of the year. These are just a few of the biggest June Pride events.
New York City's own 32nd Gay Pride Parade featured about 200,000 marchers and drew hundreds of thousands of spectators, including all six mayoral hopefuls. 36 gay and lesbian couples exchanged vows at a demonstration in Central Park for marriage rights.
In the gay mecca of San Francisco, organizers estimated the Pride Parade gathered 1 million people. This year's theme was Queerific, intended to mark a fully inclusive event.
In Paris, newly elected openly gay mayor Bertrand Delano was the city's first mayor to join the Pride March. He led it with a banner reading, "All Together Against Discrimination." Estimates ranged from 250,000 to 500,000 marchers, but all agreed it was the biggest Paris Pride ever.
Berlin's new openly gay mayor, Klaus Wowereit, spoke out at the Pride rally, promising to combat the neo-Nazi right. The Berlin crowd was estimated at 1 million, and the rainbow flag was flown at City Hall for the first time.
By contrast, Milan's deputy mayor, Riccardo De Corato, told reporters that the city council did not share the sentiments of this rally, referring to 30,000 people who marched in support of equal rights.
Thousands also marched in Zurich, with a focus on demanding legal recognition for gay and lesbian couples.
About 2,000 people marched in Edinburgh.
In Tel Aviv, Mayor Ron Huldai welcomed some 25,000 marchers to their celebration of Gay Pride Day, saying that the freedom of all individuals is an integral part of the city of Tel Aviv. A few Palestinians were able to join in, marching with their arms linked with Israelis in a call for unity. Jerusalem's month-long schedule of Pride events also featured outreach to Palestinian gays and lesbians.
Toronto celebrates Pride in a big way, this year with the theme Love. The annual march drew a crowd estimated at 1 million and was predicted to pump some $60 million Canadian dollars into the local economy. The earlier Toronto Dyke March drew about 25,000.
8 smaller Canadian cities also celebrate Pride. Some 6,000 people turned out for Calgary Pride in early June, with former Prime Minister Joe Clark becoming the highest-ranking politician ever to participate in a Pride march.
The 7th Pride March in Sao Paulo, Brazil, drew some 200,000 people, with Mayor Marta Suplicy speaking at the rally.
But as the group Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, GALS, prepared for its own very private Pride celebrations, there were a series of death threats to its leaders. They included vandalism on the GALS offices in Harare, where death threats and anti-gay slurs were painted on the walls. GALS spokesperson Keith Goddard vowed the group will not give in to intimidation, but the group has removed its membership list from the office as a precaution.
There was intense controversy this week at the United Nations Historic General Assembly Special Session on HIV/AIDS over the role of gays and lesbians in the global struggle against the disease. A representative of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, Igelhurk, was ultimately allowed to speak at a roundtable discussion after heated debate and 3 votes. Although the final vote was unanimously in favor, fully two-thirds of national delegations were either absent or abstained. Iglehurst's Karen Kaplan told delegates, "Wherever people are victimized by stigma or singled out for hate, they are vulnerable to HIV. It would be wrong, deadly, and disastrous not to put human rights at the heart of our response to AIDS."
But religious conservatives prevailed in deleting any specific mention of sexual minorities from the declaration outlining AIDS prevention strategies for the UN and its member nations. Muslim nations staunchly opposed explicit references to homosexuality and prostitution as representing a tolerance they found offensive. Their protests were supported by the Vatican. More liberal nations ultimately caved in when it became clear it was necessary if the Muslim nations were to participate at all. The final language of the declaration refers to those at risk due to sexual practice, livelihood, and in the case of prisoners, institutional location. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Mary Robinson of Ireland said, "For many, there is a reluctance to recognize groups affected by HIV/AIDS, including men having sex with men. Much of that reluctance is based on religion and on culture. A failure to recognize it means the numbers of those infected can only grow." The final declaration does include one controversial section referring to the need for human rights protections as essential to reduce vulnerability to HIV/AIDS, although Australia's original draft had made a much stronger statement against discrimination.
In Egypt, the 52 gay men arrested in a police raid on a riverboat nightclub were formally charged this week with practicing debauchery with men, with two men also charged for contempt of the Islamic religion. They have been incarcerated since early May, and British-based human rights watchdog Amnesty International believes they have been tortured while in custody. Amnesty believes the men were arrested solely because of their sexual orientation and has expressed grave concern for their well-being. No trial date has yet been set, and there is no possibility of appeal for verdicts by the state security court where they will be tried.
One of Australia's most notorious civil lawsuits was decided this week, with high-profile gay attorney John Marsden winning damages of $585,000 Australian dollars in his defamation suit against Seven Network Television. In a 2,500-page ruling, the court found that two Seven Network programs in the mid-1990s had maliciously and recklessly published false and grave claims that Marsden had paid for sex with underage minors. 11 of those alleged rent boys testified against him, but the court found them to lack credibility, describing several as liars and one as a poofter basher. Marsden, a former president of the New South Wales Law Society, said the court had totally vindicated him of the allegations, but added that his reputation would be forever tainted by them. Marsden's six-year legal struggle cost him $6 million Australian dollars, most of which Seven Network was ordered to pay. However, Seven announced immediately that it will be filing an appeal. Anthony Shembri of the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby welcomed the judgment, saying, "What the court has said is that it's possible to have a good reputation, a settled reputation, as an openly gay person. Too often we hear that being gay or lesbian is to be of bad reputation, and the court has found that that's certainly not the case." He called the ruling a really strong message from the court that there's not necessarily a relationship between homosexuality and child mistreatment or pedophilia.
Taiwan's government has drafted a bill to extend adoption rights and legal recognition to gay and lesbian couples. The Ministry of Justice said in a statement this week that, in accordance with the draft of Basic Laws on Human Rights Protection, the government should safeguard the human rights of homosexuals by allowing them to form families and adopt children. However, the ministry emphasized that this was not marriage, which Taiwan law reserves for a relationship between a man and a woman. The bill will require approval by the parliament, where it has already been sent for review. While a spokesperson for the gay rights group Hotline called the move a breakthrough, he wished the bill provided for equal marriage rights and called for urgent government attention to issues of employment discrimination.
U.S. Surgeon General David Satcher this week issued controversial recommendations for sex education. The report includes a call for greater understanding towards gays and lesbians, saying that scientific research indicates that sexual orientation is established early in life and cannot be changed. The report also condemns anti-gay violence. It calls for developing and disseminating educational materials for sex ed classes that cover the full continuum of human sexual development. The report called the Surgeon General's call to action to promote sexual health and responsible behavior was 2 years in the making. The Bush administration was quick to note that Satcher is a Clinton appointee whose views are not its own. Satcher, whose term ends in February, insisted he was not taking sides on issues, but reporting on scientific findings.
And finally, openly bisexual actress Angelina Jolie, much honored for her portrayal of the late lesbian supermodel Gia, had some interesting thoughts this week about her role as video game character Lara Croft in the new film Tomb Raider. Jolie told the German magazine Amica that, "I could really imagine Lara not having a lot of time for men. Can you imagine that, Lara Croft as a lesbian? That would be a shock for the boys playing with their joysticks in their bedrooms around the world. At the end of the day, I really like women. I'd love it if the girls in the cinema watching Lara Croft find me just as hot as their boyfriends do."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 30th, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Pride heated up just as News Wrap was going into production this week. Yugoslavia's first ever Pride event turned into street riots on June 30th, the day after thousands of diehard Serbian nationalists demonstrated against the recent extradition of former President Slobodan Milosevic to the UN War Crimes Court in The Hague. Some of those same nationalists joined with skinheads and soccer fans to attack gay and lesbian activists as they gathered in Belgrade's central square. Lepe Mlađenović of the lesbian group Labris told reporters that the thugs were waiting in the square and immediately surrounded and attacked individuals as they arrived. Police fired into the air but were unable to stop the attacks, which continued as small groups of activists attempted to meet at a student cultural center. The assailants went on to stone the offices of the Social Democratic Union Party, which has supported both Milosevic's extradition and gay rights legislation. 5 people, including a police officer, were reportedly injured. Meanwhile, 1,500 marched in Caracas in Venezuela's first Pride March on July 1st without incident. Vienna's June 30th Christopher Street Day brought hundreds of thousands of colorfully costumed participants out to party and pursue equal rights. In London, an estimated 85,000 took part in that city's gay Mardi Gras parade, and in Mexico City, several hundred protested for lesbian and gay rights. Back in the U.S., some activists are becoming cynical about the ways in which the Stonewall Uprising is being commemorated these days, but others are still finding value in networking around the mainstream events. More on those stories as our program continues. Are gay pride celebrations becoming too commercial? The answer is yes, according to the organizers of 2 alternative events in San Francisco's Mission District, Gay Shame and the traditional Dyke March. Lisa Detmer reports.
In response to feeling left out of gay pride, queer radicals around the country have created a number of alternative celebrations. San Francisco had its first Gay Shame event. One of the organizers of San Francisco Gay Shame, Matt Bernstein Sycamore, a.k.a. Matilda.
Well, we decided to organize Gay Shame because we're ashamed of gay pride. Gay pride has essentially become nothing more than a giant advertising campaign, a chance for multinational corporations, whether it's Coors, a right-wing company owned by bigots who nonetheless want gay dollars, or whether it's Bristol-Myers Squibb who always choose profits over people's lives.
The event presented issues such as gentrification in the Mission and prison reform as queer issues and opposed reformist issues such as gay marriage, typically a central issue at Gay Pride. Gay Shame was intended to be a free activist, artist, and performance space where queers could create their own non-corporate culture in the spirit of the original Stonewall riots.
We wanted to create a queer autonomous space for community building to foster radical queer outsider identity and create our own culture rather than just consuming all the rot that's being sold to us.
Another alternative celebration was the Dyke March, which had over 10,000 participants, kicking off with speakers and music in San Francisco's Dolores Park. Dyke March organizer Lisa Roth.
Well, like all years, the Dyke March is all women, and that's a big alternative to Gay Pride, because one of the reasons we started the Dyke March was because we felt lesbians had always been marginalized in the gay movement. So that's different as it's always been. As you know, we have no corporate sponsors, we have no politicians on stage, we have no men, and we have no titty policy.
Among the speakers at the Dyke March was Linda Evans, a political prisoner recently pardoned by President Clinton after serving 16 years. She responded to a question of what queer liberation should be about.
I think that it's very important for us not to get bought off by the dream of assimilation and to realize that we don't want to be assimilated into this society, that this society has nothing to do with the values of liberation, personal liberation, or political liberation that can extend to people all over the world. To me, queer liberation is about fighting against racism and for equality for all people. It's about an end to corporate capitalism and building a cooperative society. It's about women's liberation and equality and rights for gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual people. Those things are not included in a pride march.
The Dyke March wound through the streets of the Intermission, ending up in a street party in the Castro. This year's Dyke March was San Francisco's 9th. This is Lisa Detmer in San Francisco.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as a gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
Queensland's premier is all for gay rights, but can he deliver? Peter Beattie faces the key questions later in the program. Especially in Western countries, many people think of Islam as an extremely strict and homophobic religion. Nonetheless, there are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Muslims who are trying to reconcile their sexual and religious identities. That was the theme of a first-of-its-kind conference that coincided with Pride Weekend in San Francisco. Larry Roberts has the story.
The Al-Fatiha Foundation organized the conference for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Muslims. The group grew out of an internet mailing list started in 1997, and the foundation was formed in 1998. Faisal Alam started the initial email list when he discovered a lack of resources for gay Muslims. He is now director of the Al-Fatiha Foundation.
The goals of the conference are very similar to the goals of the organization, which is mainly to create a supportive network and a safe space for gay and lesbian Muslims to discuss the issues concerning their lives. And sexuality and sex itself is extremely taboo in Muslim communities, in mainstream Muslim communities. So the fact that we're talking about Islam and homosexuality is even much more of a controversial topic.
The conference included workshops on such topics as interpretation of scripture, coming out, human rights in Islamic countries, HIV/AIDS and the Islamic community, immigration and asylum, transgender issues, and women's issues. Surprisingly, among those speaking at the conference were ministers from predominantly gay Christian denominations. Faisal Alam.
They have already laid the precedent for the faith-based community. I mean, a lot of the not only techniques, but sort of the process of even liberation theology, if you will, has come from Christianity and Judaism. So, to just have Reverend Troy Perry, for example, who's the founder of the Metropolitan Community Churches, which now has more than 45,000 members and 300 churches, he started off with 12 people in 1968. So he can also provide us a vision of where Al-Fatiha might be in the next 25 years.
Alam asserts that Islam is currently the most homophobic religion, pointing out that there are 6 predominantly Muslim countries that have the death penalty for homosexuality. Some Islamic clergy members have made seemingly contradictory statements that there should not be violence against gay people, but that they still support the death penalty for homosexual acts. Betty Shabazz is a pseudonym used by a Muslim woman who lives in London and helps run the British chapter of Al-Fatiha. She says clergy who are actually supportive are still rare.
The only person that I can remember is an imam who gave a talk at the conference in London last year who didn't say outright that Islam condones homosexuality, which none of us will say ever. But what he would say was that God makes different kinds of people and we need to learn to live together. And that, coming from an Islamic point of view, is a huge, big step.
There are movements within Islam which the members of Al-Fatiha hope they can work with. Faisal Alam.
There's a rising progressive movement that's coming out of Egypt, Indonesia, South Africa, where Islam is not monolithic. So these are places that are fairly liberal, that have, you know, feminist theologies that are coming out in the forefront, which is very similar to what happened with Christianity and Judaism 25, 30 years ago. So it's Islam's turn now. So I think for us to get onto the tail end of that progressive movement is what we're trying to accomplish.
About 100 people participated in the conference. In addition, a community reception was held, which was open to the general public, followed by a candlelight vigil. And a contingent from Al-Fatiha marched in San Francisco's Pride Parade. For This Way Out in San Francisco, I'm Larry Roberts.
Hi, this is Ron Romanofsky.
And this is Paul Phillips.
And we're Romanofsky and Phillips.
You're listening to This Way Out,
the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
And if we weren't on the radio right now, I'm sure we would be listening.
Peter Beattie was returned to power in the Australian state of Queensland in February with one of the biggest electoral landslides in Australian political history. Beattie's leftist Labour Party previously held power as a minority government with the support of an independent member of parliament. Since Beattie won so decisively this time, activists hoped there would be further law reform for gays and lesbians in Queensland, but many are complaining that little progress has been made thus far. Among their concerns is the state's two-tier age of consent. 16 is the age of consent for all forms of sexual activity, with the exception of anal intercourse, for which the age of consent is 18. Although this legally applies to all Queenslanders, it clearly affects more young gay men and has often been misunderstood. Even some government departments have wrongly published material claiming the age of consent for gays, regardless of the specific act, is 18. Queensland activist and radio presenter John Frame caught up with Premier Beattie at the launch of an arts conference in Brisbane and asked him about clarifying that age of consent law, as well as the recently enacted anti-vilification hate crimes bill and other pending civil rights initiatives. The interview also includes Beattie's perspective on the Conservative National Party and Pauline Hanson's far-right and notoriously racist One Nation movement.
Mr. Peter Beattie, Premier of Queensland. It's John Frame here from Queer Radio on 4ZZZ in Brisbane. How are you?
Good, I'm good, John. Good to have you here with a concept of ideas and the launch of the Powerhouse for the Ideas Conference. It's a great idea.
This is happening in August.
Yes, it is indeed. And it's about getting people with controversial ideas. I mean, we're not afraid. I expect there'll be a lot of people here who don't have views that I do. But we are sponsoring it. We're putting money in it. Jim and I got together about the concept because we actually want to exchange ideas. Out of ideas comes inspiration, policy direction, a whole lot of things like that, which is good.
Fine. Also, the Brisbane Powerhouse has been a controversial centre because it's strongly supported gay and lesbian artists.
So?
As they deserve to be.
Well, that's a good thing. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, art, creativity is not limited to any one section of the community. It's important, and I think that we encourage all sections of the community. Okay. And everyone's got a clear message, why not?
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that. I see a bit of controversy. A bit of controversy doesn't hurt from time to time, you know.
Certainly
gets
doesn't.
All those conservatives like me off our tails.
Okay, a couple of years ago, the Labor government in Queensland got its foot in the door for social equity for gay men and lesbians because we expect to be treated equally with every other Queenslander
sure.
under the law.
Well, we've done that in areas like domestic violence, industrial relations, a whole string of areas. And we've not been afraid to do that. And there's been criticism, as you know, when some of the measures went through the Parliament. A number of National Party members said that the wrath of God would descend on me. And it hasn't yet. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that in an anti-Christian sense because I'm a Christian, but, I mean, you know, we believe that, I mean, anyone who's a Christian knows that you treat people on what's in their heart, not their gender, not their religion, not the colour of their skin or anything else, and whether you got hair or not. Now, I don't have a lot, so I don't want to be victimised or discriminated against because of my lack of follicle desert that I happen to have. Actually, you're about the same as
I'm
me.
I'm about the same.
I think
level.
About it.
That's right. Can we also expect that the Labor government will be stepping forward now that you have a very clear majority in Queensland? Will we see more progress towards true social equity for gay men, lesbians and transgenders in Queensland?
Well, as you know, there are a number of issues which we're pursuing now. Any of our policies that we've spelled out prior to the election, we'll deliver on those. We do have policies about equity and fairness, and we will continue to pursue them. So, okay. Stay tuned.
A good friend of mine through our station, his best friend was a man who was walking with a woman, was murdered by thugs after yelling abuse at him, gay slurs and such, and yet gay men and lesbians aren't included in the anti-vilification legislation.
There was a reason for that, because I gave a commitment to multicultural society groups and ethnic groups as a result of the Pauline Hanson phenomena that we would do what we did.
Yep.
And that was specifically a commitment I gave as an anti-Pauline Hanson position. Now, okay. I know some in the gay and lesbian community haven't appreciated that. Their issues are being considered as part of a general review of the anti-discrimination legislation, but this was a major election commitment I gave to protect people from anti-vilification as a result of Pauline Hanson's policies and the strategies that have been pursued by some extremists. Yep. Now, we are continuing that review in terms of gay and lesbian issues, and we haven't finalised that, but that's where that is at the moment.
And there's one more issue, and this is one. I sent you a letter, also one to the Attorney-General, one to my local member, Neil Roberts, and this is discussing the fact that with age of consent in Queensland, it's been since the Guss government in 1990 changed the actual way that it's interpreted, and yet most of the public doesn't understand it. I'm asking for the government to actually issue a pamphlet to the public, make something available so that they know what the story is.
What, the difference in ages of consent?
Yeah, the fact that 16-year-old men can have sex with other men if they want to, that's quite legal. It's just that nobody is allowed to do anal sex till they're 18.
That's true.
Most of the public don't understand that, and asking that they
be told. If it's about educating about the existing law, well, we're always happy to do that.
That's great.
Okay?
That's wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Peter Beattie, Premier of Queensland.
John, all the best. Thank you.
That was Queensland Premier Peter Beattie speaking with Brisbane activist and radio presenter John Frame. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambage, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Lisa Detmer, Larry Roberts, John Frame, and Lucia Chappelle contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, CFRU Guelph, Ontario, KGNU Boulder, Colorado, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.